Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal. I'm flying solo here in the kitchen today on a rainy, rainy sort of day. This is KHOI Community Radio. We are a bunch of volunteers. This is the voice of people who kind of speak our mind and enjoy doing it too. This is a special thing happening in Central Iowa. KHOI has been part of this community for almost 4 years. We're coming up on our fourth birthday. We're a nice bunch of people, and we are glad that you are with us. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. We get together around this kitchen table to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions, and we get by with a little help from our friends. Support comes from Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocery in Ames. Community-owned, community-focused since 1974, open daily 7 to 9. Located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames, everyone can shop Wheatsfield Co-op. And we do. We do. Today, on the Donalana Kitchen, we'll be considering summer things. Yeah, summer things. And we'll have a little look into what's happening in the fields around us. We've had a burst of rain recently after a burst of drought, and that's just how summer goes here in Central Iowa. So the first summer thing I want to consider is the arrival of a summer cold. It is no fun to be sick in the summertime. Whatever has arrived and hit Central Iowa, my heart goes out to you because this is a doozy, folks. It's a real doozy. I'm coming off of it. My co-host Donna is kind of in the middle of it. Not good to get a cold in the middle of summer, but just like any cold. Now, I am not a doctor, but I will suggest that for this cold, heat, liquids, and chicken soup will do you up just fine, even though it is the middle of the summer. You think you can't be warm enough, go ahead and get warmer. Find yourself a hot tub or a heating pad or something. Snuggle down with a good book. Apply a warm cat. Relax. You'll get through this cold. Awful stuff, summer colds, yes. And chicken soup. Advice from somebody who makes chicken soup. It does work. It really does. It helps a lot. So do that. So good health to everybody out there. Things about the summer, too. Garlic harvest. Garlic harvest happened earlier this month. We had nice garlic harvest out of my garden. And I harvested my garlic, unfortunately, before the rains hit. And I went to dig my garlic out of the ground. And the ground was so hard, I put my garden fork in, applied my, well, I'm not a puny person, but I applied all the force I could to that fork. I jumped on top of it, and it just kind of went in the ground and went bung, 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 bung. I had a really hard time getting my fork into the ground to get out the garlic this year. It was hard fought, but it's excellent garlic. And then the rains came, so about for the second half of my garlic harvest, I could just pull things out. So, hope everybody else had a good garlic harvest. Along with garlic, this time of year, the onions are bursting. The leeks are doing just dandy, same family. The leeks, yes, they're coming along just fine. And I have a few thoughts about another summer thing in the garden. I've learned to love okra. Okra, it's one of those crops that people either love or hate, those little pods that come on those really pretty plants. It's got probably the prettiest flower you have ever seen. And if I'm remembering my readings in garden catalogs and garden books correctly, okra, believe it or not, is related to cotton. Cotton, yes. So instead of a bowl of cotton, it's producing this little pod of stuff. And people complain about the sliminess of okra, but what other kind of vegetable makes its own gravy? Huh? Gotta like that okra. And I'm wishing all you that grow okra out there a good crop, and I'm waiting for mine to get a little taller. It's a lot easier to harvest when it's a little taller. I'm having to reach underneath to get those first ones, but they're well worth it. So, rain. We've had rains. Rain, and that makes things grow. That makes lawns grow. We love our lawns. Mowing, spraying herbicide, thatching, fertilizing. Heaven knows we impact the environment with all that stuff we do to our lawns. And even out in the country in central Iowa, rural people can mow and mow and mow. They can go on forever. This is a prairie, folks. This is a prairie. So there is an impact to that sort of thing. And coming up, here's an imaginative dialogue between two celestial beings that have more than a passing knowledge of the Earth and our involvement with it. Here's a talk between God and Saint Francis. Cookie Crumb Theater presents Thoughts on Lawn Care, a dialogue between God and Saint Francis.
Francis, you all know about gardens and nature. What in the world is going on down there? What happened to the dandelions, violets, thistle, and stuff I started eons ago? I had a perfect, no-maintenance garden plan. Those plants grow in any type of soil, whisk down drought, and multiply with abandon. The nectar from the long-lasting blossoms attracts butterflies, honeybees, flocks of songbirds. I expected to see a vast garden of colors by now. All I see are those green rectangles.
It's the tribes that settled there, Lord. Mm. Suburbanites. They started calling your flowers weeds and went to great lengths to kill them and replace them with grass.
Grass? Grass? That's so boring. It's not colorful. It doesn't attract butterflies, birds, and bees, only grubs and sod worms. It's temperamental with temperatures. Do these suburbanites really want all that grass growing there?
Apparently so, Lord. They go to great pains to grow it and keep it green. They begin each spring by fertilizing grass and poisoning any other plants that crop up in the lawn.
The spring rains and warm weather probably make that grass grow really fast. That must make the suburbanites happy.
Apparently not, Lord. As soon as it grows a little, they cut it, sometimes twice a week.
They cut it? Do they bale it, like hay?
Not exactly, Lord. Most of them rake it up and put it in bags.
Ah, they bag it. Cash crop, do they sell it?
No, sir. Just the opposite. They pay to throw it away.
Now, let me get this straight. They fertilize grass, so it will grow. And then when it does grow, they cut it off and pay to throw it away.
Yes, sir.
These suburbanites must be relieved in the summer when we cut back on all the rain and turn up the heat. That surely slows the growth and saves them a lot of work.
Well, you aren't going to believe this, Lord. When the grass stops growing so fast, they drag out hoses and pay more money to water it so they continue to mow it and continue to pay to get rid of it.
That's nonsense. At least they kept some of the trees. Oh, what a sheer stroke of genius, if I do say so myself. The trees grow leaves in the spring that provide beauty and shade in the summer. In the autumn, they fall to the ground and form a natural blanket to keep moisture into the soil, and they protect the trees and bushes. Plus, as they rot, the leaves form compost to enhance the soil. It's the natural cycle of life.
You better sit down, Lord. The suburbanites have drawn a new circle. As soon as the leaves fall, they rake them into great piles, and again, they pay to have them hauled away.
No. What do they do to protect shrub and tree roots in the winter and keep the soil moist? And I'm confused.
Oh, after throwing the leaves away, they go out and buy something which they call mulch. They haul it home and spread it around in place of the leaves.
I'm going to regret asking this. Where do they get this mulch?
They cut down the trees, grind them up to make the mulch.
Enough. I don't want to think about this anymore. St. Catherine is in charge of the arts. What movie does she have scheduled for us tonight?
Oh, let's see. Let's see. It's Dumb and Dumber, Lord. It's a really stupid movie.
Never mind. I think I just heard the whole story.
That was a presentation of God and Lawn Care, a radio drama presented by Cookie Crumb Theater, which is a small little subsection of the Donalana Kitchen. And you heard Doc Anderson as the voice of God, and yours truly as the voice of St. Francis. Doc Anderson is a part of this community, and he's also a summer sort of thing. You can find Doc Anderson doing, oh, magic and making balloons and entertaining people, telling tall tales and improbable sort of bits of witticism. He is at the downtown farmers market and other events in the central Iowa area. Doc Anderson is a magician, a prestidigitator, a entertainer of people. He's a fun sort of guy. So stop at the Ames Farmers Market and give him a visit. Last time I saw him down there, he was sitting there handing out balloons, talking up a blue streak, and the kids were about 20 deep all around him, and that's a good sign. That's a good sign of summer. It's nice to see our young folks willing to pick up bits of wisdom from the older generation. That's for good. Oh, also, you can find Becca the Balloon Lady down at Farmer's Market. It's really nice. Not just vegetables and flowers and things to eat are at farmers markets all over the country and all over central Iowa now. Musicians and entertainers come out of the woodwork. A farmers market is a lovely way to gather and share good summer things. So go there for good entertainment and food, summer veggies, yes. Like I said, garlic is up now and leeks and onions are making good showing. All those nice summer vegetables and tomatoes. I believe tomatoes are on the way. Yes, they are on the way. We had a dry June. It took a while to kind of get them going, those of us that grow them out in, under the blue sky without the help of too much other inputs, although I watered mine prodigiously, so I've got tomatoes coming. Things are looking pretty good out there. Don is always asking me when the first tomatoes are coming, and I'm always glad to say, soon, soon, soon. I've got lots of little cherries coming on. Picked a few big ones the other day. For some reason, I had a great big yellow one that sort of was way too eager to grow. It grew, kind of hung on the vine, ripened really nicely, fell off and rotted before I got to it. So got to be timely out there, folks. And scout tomatoes this time of year for pests. The dreaded tomato hornworm may be out there. And when you've got one, you will know it. It will look back at you. It will even talk back to you. It is a big, big worm, but don't be afraid of it. It just likes your tomatoes just as much as you do. We're going to listen to a little music here, and this is a locally grown polka. It was written by a friend of mine called Mike Bell. He used to be part of the Barn Owl Band a long time ago, but he left. But he left us this great tune, and this is the Barn Owl Band playing a good tune called "The First Tomato." He wrote this tune. Because actually he and I were having a really informal and friendly tomato race one summer about who could get the first tomato. I don't remember which of us got the first tomato of that season, but it did leave us with a fine tune. So let's listen to the first tomato.
Thank you.
We're back. This is the Donalena Kitchen. You're listening to KHOI, 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames, and all the other nice little towns in central Iowa. Not just Story City, Ames, but we hit Searing and Radcliffe and Pilot Mound and Polk City and all those nice places. So I hope everybody's got their radio on, listening around their kitchen table to the Donalena Kitchen. This is community radio. This very radio station has been around. We are kind of over the hump. We are up and running. We are community-driven, volunteer-based. KHOI will be celebrating our four-year anniversary. Get that, folks, 4 years. Come and join us on August 13th for our fourth birthday celebration, 4B celebration, which is going to include birthday, basketball, books, and barbecue. Books as in book sale. There will be a book sale. So come and buy books. But if you have books to donate, bring them to the KHOI studio and we'll just kind of swap around. Everybody comes to book sales, brings books and takes some home. Let's do that. This event will take place at our station located at 410 Douglas Avenue in downtown Ames. Join us for a day of fun and activities for the entire family at your favorite community radio station. That's KHOI's 4B birthday celebration, August 13th. That is coming up. Yes, we have been around a while. We're part of your ears. We're part of Central Iowa. You're listening to the Donalena Kitchen. We're talking about summer things today. We had summer thunderstorms. I think it's still summer thunderstorming out there a little bit, a little damp out there. Lots of good things to happen in the summer. One nice thing about summer, well, you can do this any time, but ice cream. Ice cream is a lovely part of summer. Ice cream, everybody has their own favorite. Everybody has their own favorite recipe. If you happen to know someone, or if you are one yourself that likes to make ice cream, like Donna does, get to know those people. They're real fun people to get to know. If you haven't yet, take a trip up to Jewell, Iowa, a little town straight north of Ames. Go to Jewell, Iowa, and there is a little farm just right outside of town that has an ice cream place all set up, and you can buy ice cream there. Good place, good place. I talked to Donna recently about ice cream.
Ice cream.
Donna's had put in a real hard job of looking up ice cream recipes, making ice cream gelatos and sorbets. So tell us what you found out, Donna.
Well, I was just kind of refreshing my brain on the distinctions between, say, gelato and ice cream and the history of frozen desserts. It's obviously the Italians claim to have invented this. And then there are stories about Marco Polo coming in with flavored snow, you know, all kinds of extravagant historical things. And apparently Thomas Jefferson was a huge ice cream fan.
Oh, it sounds like a Thomas Jefferson sort of thing.
Yeah. And apparently he ran up a $250 ice cream bill at some point in some establishment. I think it was in Philadelphia or something. You know, I mean, this is American as it can be.
Scandal. Yeah. I love it.
Ice cream. So, you know, people now talk a lot about gelato this and sorbet that. But the basic distinctions are ice cream and gelato are quite similar, except that ice cream usually has a little more air whipped into it, and gelato can actually be a little more flavor dense. So there's not a huge difference, you know, so don't be worried about making that distinction too much. And then sorbet, or as we used to call it when we were growing up, sherbet.
Yes, sherbet.
Same thing. Really, these are usually non-dairy based, fruit based.
That's why it's different than ice cream. Ice cream has got cream.
Uh-huh.
Sorbet or sherbet is not.
And gelatos can kind of be either.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's granita, which is I'm going to give you a recipe for granita in a little bit, because granita is much more crystallized, and it's something you can make without an ice cream machine. So ice cream machines are – there's the old-fashioned crank with the salt kind that we used to have when we were kids.
Stone Mountain, I believe they're called.
Something like that. Yeah. Of course, there's the electric version, or there's the hand crank version. And then in more recent times, we've gotten a lot of there are several kinds of, you know, kind of home kitchen ice cream makers. There's the kind where you have the bowl that's filled with something that you put in the freezer and you freeze that, and then your mixture should be very cold before you plug that in. Otherwise, it won't be cold enough. Or I, fortunately, have a beautiful Italian electric ice cream machine, which is it makes about a quarter at a time, and you just plug it in, and it's got its own freezer unit in it, and it's
I've seen this
fail-proof
machine. It looks like a little air conditioner,
yeah,
sort of.
It's about a foot and a half long.
Bigger than a bread box sort of thing.
And a little hefty.
Freezer and a little really classy looking kind of art deco almost.
Yeah, this was by the good grace of a client of mine, Michelle Pfeiffer.
Ah, I want to ask Don, how in the world did she get an ice cream machine from Michelle Pfeiffer? I believe this is the ever so famous person called Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yes, well, you know, I was a private chef in Los Angeles for many, many years. And, of course, the necessity to make things that were healthy, low in fat, and interesting in flavor meant that I actually made a lot of my clients had ice cream machines. So I got quite handy with it. It's a fast thing to use, especially when all you have to do is make some mixture and plug it in. So I think one of the things that Lana and I are going to do is we're going to have – at least during the summer, one ice cream or sorbet recipe every week.
And frozen dessert of the week.
Yes.
What do you have for us this week, Donna?
Well, we're gonna post on our website this particular recipe for coffee granita. Now, the beauty of a granita is that it's granita. You do not need any sort of machine to make this.
Oh.
You just mix up a liquid. This one is coffee. And you put it either in – it just goes in the freezer. Like I make a mixture and put it like in a 9x9 Pyrex baking dish. And then you let it start to freeze around the edges and in the middle. And then you stir it with a fork. And I'm going to read you this recipe. It's from Gelato, Italian ice cream, sorbetti and granita. So a Sicilian classic, coffee granita is wonderful, served in a fresh brioche. That's really exotic. On a hot day or as an after-dinner refreshment in small, elegant glasses. Now, one thing they don't say, I like to do this, is also serve it with whipped cream.
Oh.
And if you make the granita fairly sweet, then you don't sweeten the whipped cream. Or if you make the granita less sweet, like this recipe is not terribly sweet, then you can sweeten the whipped cream. Or you can sweeten both if you really want. But this one is you take 4 cups of hot, freshly brewed espresso or strong coffee, and you add 1/2 cup of sugar. And then it says, in a medium bowl, combine the espresso and sugar, stirring to dissolve the sugar. Set aside to cool. Pour into a 9-inch round or square baking dish, and you freeze until the mixture becomes slushy around the edges, about 30 minutes. Then you stir, I use a fork, to break up the ice crystals, and you continue freezing, stirring the mixture every 20 minutes until it is slushy, about 1 hour. That says mix 1 quart, serves 4.
Ooh, this sounds good. So perhaps setting a timer to remember to stir it.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Yeah, and that's it's a loose timing, you know. Mm-hmm. Freezers vary in temperature and, you know, whatever else you have in there. But the beauty of it is it's really easy to make. You can make it in kind of any flavor you want. You could just freeze orange juice and sugar or grapefruit and sugar.
It sounds like popsicles for adults.
Oh, yes. Well, popsicles are – it is – It really is. Popsicles are a whole other thing we'll have to get into.
You can find that recipe on the KHOI website, and that's www.khoifm.org. And you can go to the Donalana Kitchen section, and we've got all kinds of stuff posted there. This is the Donalana Kitchen. Nothing like a bunch of little jigs to kind of get you in the mood for a rainy day. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We have a guest in the Donalana Kitchen. Liz Colby from Practical Farmers of Iowa has joined us. Hello, Liz.
Hi, Lana.
Thank you for coming over. There's all sorts of things happening out in the field. PFI for many, many years has had field days. It's a way to connect farmers to farmers, consumers to farmers, get people out there and see how things are done. Is that pretty much what a PFI field day is, Liz?
that's my version of it. That is a pretty good version of what they are. They are, my favorite part about field days is that they're very farmer-led. So other events, we, you know, kind of know what the speaker's going to talk about, and field days we do to an extent, but a lot of it sort of comes from what's going on in the field that particular day, what they've done in the past few weeks in terms of management, and what questions the people there have, because they always have better questions when they're seeing it in front of them and not sitting in a conference room somewhere.
It's wonderful that farmers are willing to invite people onto their farms, say, here's what's going on. This is how I grow things. Come and look. This is what I've tried. It's wonderful that people do that, and bless their hearts for farmers taking time during a busy summer to do it.
Yeah, and it's more than just the couple hours that people are there. We were, you know, just talking about, especially the vegetable farms, the workspace is pretty compact. They might have, you know, up to 20 acres, but more so, they have maybe 4 acres in production. And with a field crops farm, you've got a back 40 to hide the mess on. But for those vegetable farmers and some of the beginners, all of their mess is right up front for people to see.
Now, we could consider it mess or consider it the resource piles that we all need to farm. Yes, we do need those things. But when people are coming to visit your farm, you do like to tidy up a bit.
Yeah, they pull weeds that might be otherwise might not be an economic threshold, but they want to get those out and get their fields looking clean. But, you know, the farmers that come to visit like to see weeds in other people's fields. That's one of their favorite parts. And they say, oh, their blueberry bushes look as unattended as mine do, and that's dying. Mine are dying, too. I feel a little better.
But it gives us all hope because we learn many new things. How many field day events have been – well, this is halfway through the summer. How many field days events were planned for the whole summer?
We have this year 24 field days, and so far we've done 10. So there's a lot to go. And usually late in the fall we add some more field days for cover crops because people get them in and didn't know if they would. So they sort of just call us up and say, I'd like to show some people what I've got going on.
That's great. That's something that Practical Farmers does. They have the courage and the foresight to share information of good things that happen and also information of bad things that maybe didn't go so well, but you can always learn from things like that. That's good. I noticed, too, that field days happen all over the state, and there is a brochure, a nice color brochure that has information of all this stuff and has a very handy map. Field days all over the state.
Yeah, they are. It kind of looks like on the map that they're clustered in central Iowa, but a little bit of that reason is because there's some Iowa State field days. We include Friend of PFI events in the back of our field day guide as just a free service to our partners. And a lot of those, because they're associated with Iowa State, tend to be, you know, clustered around the Ames area. But we really try and distribute our field days around the state so that we can get people from every county at field days. And, you know, we don't always get them spread to every county, of course, every year, but we like to be able to reach those members in outlying parts of the state. And so if you're way out there and you want to host a field day or know somebody that should, we always want to hear from you so that we can extend our reach.
A nice thing about field days, too, is visiting other farms, but also seeing Iowa. There's a lot of these farms and field day sites that are in little towns that, frankly, I've never heard of. But get your map out, follow those back roads, see Iowa. It's fun. It's an adventure to get to some of these places, and you meet nice people when you get there.
Yeah, it's an adventure for us, too. Last year we had, going to one field day in LaVillia, we had a road totally washed out under a current of flowing water. The next road was too muddy to be passable, and so we ended up going a third route, trying to set up, you know, wayfinding signs for everybody else as we were doing this. So it can be pretty interesting, but they're beautiful places on gravel roads that you would never find otherwise. So it's always exciting. And we do include in our field day guide verbal directions to the farms given by the farmers. So a lot of times Google Maps is, you know, pretty good, but not always spot on.
Yeah, another thing you can find in this field day map or field day brochure, there's pictures of what you'll see, the descriptions, the dates, the hosts, information about the hosts, the topics, the speakers, and occasionally, and a little more than occasionally, there is food involved, and some of it's free, and some of it is a nominative cost, but it's always fun.
Yeah, all of our regular field days are free to attend. Occasionally, we'll have a workshop or something that we've invited more of an organizational speaker to. For example, we have a workshop in August on pollinator habitat where we've invited a speaker from Xerces. And so we're providing breakfast and lunch for that and providing for the cost of the speaker to come. So we, for non-members, are asking for, there's a fee for that, but for members, it's still a free event. But all of the other field days are free to attend for members and non-members. Usually over half, about 55% of our field day attendees are not yet members of Practical Farmers of Iowa. They may join after going to a few field days and meeting some people. But a lot of times we'll have potlucks or some food provided at the end, and those are fantastic. That extra time for people to sit down together and get to know the other folks that showed up and get to ask, more personal questions of the hosts that they might not feel comfortable sharing or asking or thinking everybody would want to know the answer to. That time is really important for farmer networking.
You mentioned that PFI members attend, non or prospective PFI members attend. Do you have to be a farmer to attend these events?
Certainly not. And I think a lot of what we see, especially the fruit and vegetable field days, are what we call aspiring farmers. They're younger people, or not younger people, actually, that are interested in moving to a more rural area and eventually starting a farm to feed their families and maybe some of their community as well. So that's always a growing part of our membership. And it's also landowners who might want to invite someone or find a tenant who farms a certain way or just looking for new ideas for their farm. But it's also just consumers and a lot of times community people that know the farmer will come to learn more about that particular farm. And a lot of times they might have family members who have farmed or, you know, grew up on a farm or their grandparents grew up on a farm. So everyone in the state is connected to agriculture somehow, and these events are a great opportunity to revisit that. One thing that, you know, we don't allow pets at field days, so that's an important thing to note.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a tourism tour. Or
These are working farms, and I'm sure many of the farms already have enough working animals there themselves, thank you, so they're busy. Yeah, it's nice of them to – and – but you can see lots of different animals, so that's good. That's good. We all eat, and it's good that all kinds of people get to go to these field days. That's wonderful. Well, what's some of the fun stuff coming up? We've got like half of the summer left, I believe.
We do. We have a lot of events left. Let's see. So let's just start with what's coming up next week. Next week in Stanton, actually RAGBRAI is going through, and for the last few years we've set up a booth along the route. We have found that some locations are more successful than others. For example, you don't want to be at the bottom of a hill. People don't like to stop there. You also don't want to be right before a town because everyone wants to get to the end at that point. But we think we've got a great spot this year. We're going to be on Mark Peterson's farm, who's our board president, and he rides RAGBRAI every year and is a big proponent of bicycling and also of cover crops. So he's got an interesting place, and we're hoping to get a lot of people at our booth will be giving away fresh produce and cold water and a little something unfried for people.
Oh, good. And you said you'd be stopping on his farm, so if people want to stretch their legs a little bit, you can look at some cover crops?
Absolutely. And a lot of times we find that people that stop aren't even from Iowa, and they've been, you know, going by all these fields and kind of want to take a look around and ask some questions about the bigger picture of ag in the state. So it's kind of a good opportunity to meet lots of people.
Good, good. RAGBRAI. We wish the folks on RAGBRAI a good pedal this year. I think it's going to be kind of warm. But it's Iowa. It's RAGBRAI. Of course it's going to be warm.
You can't have RAGBRAI without heat stroke.
That's true.
We've also got this week on Wednesday a field day at Maple Edge Farm, which is the bakehouses. And that's always actually a staff favorite to go to.
The bakehouse is a family.
Yes.
Oh, a bakehouse. Oh, bread. Oh, yeah. No. Bakehouse. Bakehouse family. Good.
And they're doing a field day on soil regeneration and the mindset of sustainability. And these are field crop farmers, and in the past few years have become really active in improving the health of their soil ecosystem. And it's been a really good partnership with PFI. They've been really willing to do many events and participate in lots of on-farm research. And so a lot of staff are, I think, going to go to that field day even if they're not working, because it's just a nice group of people and a fun place to go.
Good, good.
And then let's see, on Saturday, I guess that's this week also, so we'll count it. We've got a fruit and vegetable field day in western Iowa, and that actually features, I'm going to say two farms, but there's a third person that's going to be participating that I'm excited about, even though he's a little skeptical, as they tend to be the first time they present.
Oh, do tell. Good.
So this one is hosted by Amber Moore and Jeremy Hall and Denise O'Brien and Larry Harris. And you may know Denise O'Brien from Iowa Politics. She has been and her husband have been doing vegetable farming for their local community for many years. And she's partnered with Amber Moore and Jeremy, who are beginning farmers, and they're doing a collaborative CSA in western Iowa. Mm-hmm. And they both bring some strengths to that. Denise has more experience. Amber has some better control over the newer logistics of marketing. And they bring in, you know, new consumers for mm-hmm. their collaborative mm-hmm. CSA. And then there's another person joining them named Kent, and he's bringing a whole bunch of equipment. He is an equipment guru and is always working on new toys and partners with a lot of vegetable farmers in Southwest Iowa to help them solve strange little problems.
Getting equipment that is made for vegetables is always a wonderful challenge. Things are made for 1,000 acres, these big, wonderful tractors. It doesn't work so well on the tomato plants. Anything that Kent can tell us about equipment for small scale, good for him.
Yeah, he'll just, you know, fuss until he kind of finds the right thing. So one problem that a farmer was having was their square. So some seeds, I think these were peas in particular, were more square than round. And in the seeder, the square ones would pop out. Mm-hmm, they wouldn't seed properly. So he found if they mix it with talc powder, the square ones go right through.
See?
So, and that's not quite as mechanical of an issue. But
yeah.
Those are the kind of things that he likes to play with. And he's got a lot of toys that he's bringing over. So I think that'll be a really fun field day.
Well, good. I want to stop right here and mention that you listen to KHOI 89.1, Story City Ames. This is a great community radio station. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We're talking to Liz Colby about Field Days, Practical Farmers of Iowa Field Days. More stuff coming up.
All right. Let's see. Oh, there's such good ones coming up in the next few weeks. Ethan and Rebecca Book have Crooked Gap Farm, and they do a meat CSA, which is pretty rare. A lot of vegetable farms have CSAs. A lot of meat producers do bundles or sell whole hogs or quarter cows, things like that. They actually do a CSA, which is a little different. So I think hearing them talk about how they market those and how they build their customer base with a CSA of meat, which could be just maybe as scary as a CSA of vegetables for some people. I think a lot of the niche meat producers will be interested in hearing about how they manage that, because it's kind of an emerging thing in the livestock market.
From this very informative brochure here, we're not talking just the usual Iowa piggies in the field here. There are rare breed animals here. Hereford hogs, Katahdin sheep, Dexter cattle, Champagne d'Argent rabbits, and a variety of slow-growing chickens. Go there and find out what a slow-growing chicken is like. That's in Knoxville. Huh, very good.
Yeah, so Knoxville was sort of in my neighborhood growing up. We played them in a lot of sports, so I always feel like they're close and familiar. And one other thing that's just on the next page in the brochure is a field day that has moved locations. So it used to be in Grinnell, and now will be in Ames at Lacewing Acres, which is owned by Julia Slocum. And this is going to be a great field day for beginning farmers and aspiring farmers, because it'll have Julia, who's in her, I think, fifth year farming by herself. But before she was farming on other farms. But she's on her own now, and her farm is out at Alluvial Brewing Company. And there will also be a meal afterward that will be up on the patio, and people can, of course, get beers and things, too. And she'll be joined there by Gary Guthrie, who owns Growing Harmony Farm and was a mentor of Julia's, and they have a great working relationship. And they're going to talk about setting up the farm in those early years and some of the ways to plan for it, what equipment you might want to get when, a lot of things that can go wrong. I think it'll be a wide range of things, but it'll be a great day. And again, that's in Ames and not in Grinnell. The new online field day guide has it corrected. But if you get a print version of the field day guide, you make a special note. Page 21 should be new.
So you're going to hear Julie and Gary as opposed to Jordan. But learning from each other, that's a wonderful reason to have a field day. The people that have had more experience teaching those that want to grow food, good for them.
Yeah, and that's the partnership field days with two farmers is something we've done a little more of this year. And it's worked really well. It gives the farmer hosting sort of a break to think when the other person is talking. And it gets another advanced, experienced farmer's set of eyes on the farm, which is nice to hear from.
Yes. Farmers talking together. The idea of sharing all the technical information is fine and dandy, but a lot of information, a lot of goodwill happens during the socialization of all of this, the getting together. Very good. What else is up?
Oh, let's see. Well, actually, county fairs are starting up, so let's take a second to talk about that. In the past, we've had a few farmers that have been really strong-willed about having an event at their county fair about PFI. The Guthrie County Fair especially has been a great event in past years. Fred Abels has set up, you know, some good workshops about cover crops there, and I believe he's doing that again this year. You got your finger on the page, right? Let's see if I can get there, too. Oh, yeah, here we go.
Wait. Yeah.
So, well, I can't find that date either, but I know that the Guthrie County Fair, maybe it's the Grundy, County Fair. That's where Fred is.
And, okay.
And he does a great job. I think Sarah Carlson will be there. And I was just talking to some members at a field day last week, and they said that when they attended that fair event, you know, kind of blew them away. And now they do cover crops and are getting more into it.
Good. Blowing people away is a good idea. Well. So they were, well, in the past, they were at the Wright County Fair, at the Winneshiek County Fair, Madison County Fair, and coming up this weekend, there's one at the Floyd County Fair, so look for them there. And there'll be one Missouri Valley, the Harrison County Fair, and Wendy Johnson will be at the Mitchell County Fair in Osage. More dates to be announced. So,
yeah. So what these are is there are members who said, I would like to represent PFI at my county fair. We don't have enough staff to go to all the county fairs. So this year we just kind of put a message out there and said, if you want to represent PFI at your county fair, we'll pay your fees, we'll send you the materials. And actually for everyone that signs up from your county fair, we're going to send that person the new member a free T-shirt. So we got a whole bunch of new T-shirts.
Yay.
Yeah. So and this, I think, is a great way to meet people in their local communities. You know, we don't need as staff to be the ones to know everybody. It's more important to us that people know each other. So helping these farmers set up at their county fair is important to us, and we hope that next year we get even more.
Oh, that's very good. There was some interesting, was the hazelnut production workshop that's coming up September 10th in
Fenton.
I don't know where Fenton is, but I'll look it up. Hazelnuts, one of those new, well, sort of newish crops that are being grown, a permanent crop that you can harvest nuts as opposed to plant a seed and cut it down. No, that's good. Long-term things.
Yeah, so Fenton is in northern Iowa. It's near Algona, I guess.
Okay.
Be, in my mind, the closest thing around to it. Jeff Jensen also is part of Trees Forever, and he is a super knowledgeable guy, and he and his family planted a lot of hazelnuts, and these are similar to the hazelnuts that you're used to getting in the store, but they're smaller. So that's one big difference between them. The European hazelnuts are a little larger, and hazelnuts grow on shrubs, actually. I always assumed it was a tree, but it's actually a shrub.
It's a shrub.
And I think he'll be, you know, an excellent speaker. I've informally chatted with him about the hazelnut, and he just is a wealth of knowledge. So
good.
They're going to talk about
these people that know what they're talking about.
Yeah, they're going to talk about, you know, the establishment and where you get the plants from, and also a little bit about how they market those, because it's one of those crops where if you don't have a market, you've got a lot of stuff sitting around.
That's right. That's right. Well, it mentions in here there's hazelnut oil, so. So you can do a lot of things with hazelnuts. Now come and learn about that sort of thing. And there's another thing, these aronia berries that are happening too. So all these new crops that people are getting excited about. How can people find out more about PFI? How can they find out more about the field days?
We have a lot of information on our website, practicalfarmers.org. Actually, one thing that we are put on our website this year is some more information about the field day hosts. So if you go to our website, you can find the bios for all these hosts. We include, you know, as much as we can in the field day guide, but the space is limited. People wanted to know how many acres do they have, what kind of equipment do they have.
Oh, we're all so noisy. So nosy.
Okay. And, you know, sometimes they have things that the field day isn't about and it's not written in the guide, but they might have a walk-in cooler they built that you really want to see.
That's there's one coming up in Decorah. That is about small-scale vegetable production, but all the stuff you need to build to, storage places and coolers, and that's a good one. What's the date of that?
That is a good one. That is September 25th, and it's at Eric Sessions and Sarah Peterson's farm, which is Patchwork Green Farm. And I think we had a field day there several years ago, but it was before my time, so I'm excited to go out to this one, and I think it'll be a popular field day as well. They're very well known in the area.
Yes. And that farm is like right next to, or almost right next to, the Seed Savers Exchange people. So
yeah, I think their land is adjacent to Seed Savers.
Anyway, lots of good growers up there, lots of good ways to meet good people. I want to thank you for coming in today, Liz. This was great. Anything else you want to say about PFI and the summer ahead?
Oh, boy. We're working on conference season already.
Oh,
so.
Dear. And that happens in the winter.
That happens in January. And hopefully we can come back and tell you about what we have planned for that. But, yeah, look at our website, call the office, and request a field day guide. We'd be happy to mail out hard copies to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Practicalfarmers.org.
And the good. Phone number?
Phone number is 515-232-5661.
Good. You can find out more about Practical Farmers. Find out more about what's happening out in the field. This is central Iowa. There's a lot of things growing there besides corn and beans. Be surprised what your friends and neighbors have up in the soil. Yes, yes. We have some upcoming information for you. There's another set of smaller scale tours going on. Wheatsfield Food Cooperative is having a summer tour 2016. They usually have classes in their store, but due to some construction considerations happening, there's no room for that sort of thing right now. So Susan Jaspers and other nice folks there have made some plans to do some tours. Last week there was one on herbs. This week there's one on there's a garden tour at the home of Ada Mae Lewis, Master Gardener. Next week, something on permaculture. And Thursday, August 4th, Food Justice with Alice McGarry, Nate Kemperman at, I believe, Alluvial Brewing Company, I think. That is at Community Farm. And Tuesday, August 9th, Fermented Food and Kombucha. At Alluvial Brewing Company. Lots of good stuff coming up. Like I said, tonight there's one garden tour. And for more information, contact Wheatsfield. You do need to register for those tours. The space is limited. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. Today we've talked about summer things, lawns, garden vegetables, ice cream, and all the many good things going on Iowa farms and in Iowa fields. Thanks to Liz Colby for being with us today from Practical Farmers of Iowa. We've got music by the Barn Owl Band from their CD, Dance Owl Night. And to celebrate our recent summer rains, we will go out with a tune called In the Rain. So enjoy good food out there. This is Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal. Great Engineering by Dalton Gackle. Eat good food, enjoy life.